episode is sponsored by High Point Market.
High Point Market is the show in the design industry to see the most product for your projects and take in new trends. When you say you're going to market, people know you mean High Point.
As West Coast designers, High Point is worth traveling to for the design inspiration alone. And you don't want to miss their world-class panels, tours, and unlimited educational and networking opportunities.
Spring Market is April 13th through the 17th, so start planning your trip now using the official Market app and their free travel concierge services.
You can get your free Market pass by pre-registering before April 10th.
To learn more and register, visit highpointmarket.org/register-HYDC.
Welcome to the Hot Young Designers Club podcast.
I'm Rebecca Plum, your big sister.
And I'm Sean Serha, your GBF.
We're not that hot or that young.
But we believe it's a state of mind that helps us build adaptable and profitable businesses.
We rely on the support of our design besties to get through each day.
So let's explore the emotional, practical, and humorous sides of being interior designers.
Welcome to the club.
Hi, Sean.
What's up, Rebecca?
We are having a recording day.
We are.
This isn't our normal time to record, so it feels like it's just like a little special moment for us.
It does feel too. And we're, for those who listen real time, this is like post our K-Biz.
Yeah, trip. We're like 1 week past K-Biz. So we are still in a little bit of physical recovery mode. But
yeah, this is the first market I've been to. I know other people who go to every market and they're like, I just plan to have some sick downtime after every market. I have been so fortunate after every market over the last 4 years. I've been fine until this one. And
like
I came back.
Illness.
And I got a cold. So yeah, I mean, that the odds are pretty good on that, actually.
Yeah, considering... no, I don't know that I've ever gotten sick either. And I remember, like, on Wednesday, it was so crowded where we were. And I'm like, oh, I just got COVID. I just felt it in my face. But I didn't. I just actually took a test because my daughter's homesick today. But I think I dodged it again. But
I should be smart and plan that like extra time for myself too. But you know, we're always more optimistic with what we think we can do with our energy.
Well, and you're already taking time off work to attend and it's hard.
It's a whole thing. Yeah. I lost a couple days, but now I'm kind of like, okay, well, we can't keep ignoring it. So I kind of understand the like people who are all upset about the back to office stuff of it all, where they're just like, we don't want to encourage people to come in when they're sick. And if people have a work from home option that they could work from home, even when they're sick, they should do that. But in the bank, I would be so mad when people would come in with these colds and they're like, well, I just can't take that sick day or I need that vacation day for something else. And I'd be so mad at them. I'd be so like, stop being selfish. And now I'm like, right now I'm feeling that energy of, yeah, but I can't take another sick day. I have to be working and doing stuff.
Well, also, I just really feel the, I think it's like the American drive to produce. Like,
yeah, to be productive.
I can't shake it. Like, I want to, even if I want to. But I did spend 2 solid days in my chambers. That's like my compromise. Like, I need to rest, but I needed to work. So I'm just going to work in bed. And somehow it's kind of restful if I don't get dressed.
Look, if Sharon Osbourne launched her empire from her bed during their reality show era, like, why can't we?
I'm all about it. So let's get into it. I think this is something we've kind of talked about internally, I think, for a couple years.
Yeah, because we're always struggling with this, but does it make sense to do it? And I feel like a lot of designers are like, well, I just can't only do a kitchen or only do a bath anymore. And I can understand if that's like a philosophical approach, if I just don't want to do that anymore. I feel like that's separate from the
financial.
Yeah. Can you actually do it? Can it work for your business? I those are separate than the, do you want it to work for your business?
Yeah. And I know it's also hard to find a contractor sometimes who will only do especially a bathroom, because a bathroom is almost the same amount of work for them as a kitchen. Like they have the same trades coming in and out.
Yeah.
It's a little faster. I mean, it is faster, but it's still a lot of coordination that people don't want to pay for.
Oh God. And the like quality of that, I'm imagining the quality of that contractor who only does a bath, just one after the other after the other, is probably not up to a unique design challenge or a different idea. Like, they just want a plug-and-play bathroom.
I mean, probably if you, like, did a mean average of every contractor who only does that. But I definitely think there are contractors who just want to do it. They can do it all, and they kind of do it all themselves. Like, maybe they pull in a sub for drywall or something. But
yeah, like they have their plumbing and electrical stuff, and then they have a tile guy who comes in or something.
Like the things that they don't really aren't that great at or don't want to do. But
yeah, I'm hearing the chuck in a truck. That's what I'm hearing.
What, like, the Tinkersley said. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the guy who, this is like all he does. They make a decent living off of it. They're not growing big or, you know, making a ton of money. But
and I do think there's people that need it. And those guys can be great to work with if you find a good one. Especially, like, I think there's a lot of usually men who are just like semi-retired or been handy their whole lives. And they kind of just like, it's their, you know, third act. And they can just handle a bathroom, no problem.
Yeah, but they don't want to be stuck on like a whole home for 2 years.
No, and they're not out there marketing. And you know, it's all word of mouth. And
Yeah. Like the unlisted ones. Those, I feel, are the hidden gems of contractors where they're like, I don't do website. Like, I always keep finding new ones where I'm like, hold on, this is like $500,000 remodel job. You have no website, no presence whatsoever. And it's all word of mouth for your whole career. And they're like, yeah, this is like 30 years like this. And they're working on beautiful properties, some of them. It's so fascinating to me.
But word of mouth with a contractor especially is gold. Like,
gold.
That's really all you need.
Anytime a contractor has mentioned me, I almost always get a call. Like, I get a lot of that, oh, well, because we trusted this recommendation from our contractor on something else or at a past job, and then when he told us to call you, I feel like it creates a firmer referral. I know this isn't a referral episode, but I feel like that really warm handoff, if they liked you, does make a difference to the customer. Like,
well, it should. I mean, it's smart if people do. I mean, I'm about to start a new project of addition, and I want the contractor I've been working with to do it with me. We just have a rapport already, and it'll just go smoother than an unknown. I mean, I know.
Agreed.
Most every designer feels that way. Okay, but today we really just want to talk about like ways that we've made kitchens and bathrooms more profitable for us, maybe more enjoyable. I think definitely 2020 to 2022, just a lot of kitchen and bath requests.
I mean, for me, almost every job always includes at least one of those spaces. Like, even if they're like, also it's the living room, but also the kitchen next to that, or the kitchen and a dining room. It always centers around, oh, the bedroom and the master bathroom. They're very like paired together for most people.
Yeah, and it makes sense. Like, for most clients or people who are undergoing a renovation, they're most worried about those permanent decisions. And like, we want them to also be worried about the portable decisions, like sofas and lamps. But that could be a phase two or three. So things that actually get put on the walls and or the walls where they go is a huge level of stress and decision fatigue and overwhelm. So
right,
it definitely makes sense. Well, so let's just talk about, do you like doing kitchens and bathrooms?
Okay, I don't necessarily like bathrooms, but I do really like kitchens. Mm. Like, I like to cook, and I love when everything has its place, and I feel like getting other people's life in order around a kitchen makes me really happy. Like when they have the organizers where they need to be and stuff can be put away properly and there's an outlet right where an outlet needs to fucking be. Like that kind of stuff and feeling like you really fixed a central part of their lives is really good. And I feel like kitchens are a chance to like make something statement making and a centerpiece of the home. So I feel like there is a lot of reward that comes with that. The bathrooms, I don't know. I haven't done, maybe because I haven't done anything that big or great yet. Like I'm still working on very modest size bathrooms with modest budgets. So I feel like I haven't had the opportunity to create that like really statement making moment yet.
Yeah, I like bathrooms. I like designing bath. I like selecting finishes for bathrooms. I don't really need to get into all the overly nitty gritty, but it's also kind of easy. There's only so much you can really do, especially with a typical size bathroom.
Oh my God, yes. Like how many other configurations are there for a toilet, a sink, and a bathtub or a shower?
Which I think is what I like to come up with creative solutions for, like tile or color, like bringing some finish-wise personality into a room. Yeah. That otherwise wouldn't have it, or the challenge of a small space. Like I like when I have limitations, if there's people that are willing to think creatively with me.
If they want to have a little fun.
Yeah, but definitely right now I'm doing a designer on call with a client who's in another state, and it's a new build, but I'm not like fully entrenched in every aspect of it. And I am like more jazzed thinking about helping with furnishing for sure. Like that definitely, like when I think of a whole house and what parts do I want to work on next, it's definitely more furniture. So I don't know. Kitchens and baths.
Is that just like, because you make more money off of furniture, or you feel like there's better payoff emotionally?
Both. I think there's just so much more you can do with furniture, especially if there's a decent budget. I don't know. I just don't love all the construction bits so much.
I don't love the getting mired down in the details of construction. It definitely gets really frustrating and overwhelming to just be locked down in that for a long time. And I feel like the unfortunate part of kitchen and bath is that the permitting, the city stuff, almost everybody wants to take out some kind of freaking wall or move a window. Like very rarely is it cosmetic only, don't touch anything. So unfortunately, that just means it turns into like, it's not just popping on a veneer, it's the whole freaking root canal first. Like, I can't just do part of something for people and they want more. And from a design perspective, that just means I have to stay involved for a lot longer than I maybe want to.
And I think there's another part when you just asked, yes, it's not as exciting because it's not as profitable. So there's definitely an undercurrent of that. But I also think I get kind of empathetic about clients and what they're spending. And when they're spending it on unseen things, because they have to, I feel like it's coming out of any future work I can do with them. And it just seems, I don't know, just a lot to spend on one room.
Like, you mean specifically furnishing? Like,
no, like a kitchen. Like, now we have to do something weird inside the walls or move plumbing around is going to cost this much more. I don't know. It just seems like I feel bad for them, I guess, is sort of what I'm saying. I don't want to spend my money that way. Try not to get, I mean, obviously I'm not saying anything. If this is the best decision and they can spend it, then do it. But
yeah.
But if you spent that same $10,000 on a sofa, like, that's way more exciting. You see it. You feel
instead it. Instead of paying $5,000 for engineering.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I get that. I do. I get
it's
that.
It's necessary. I'm not saying don't do it or skirt still gonna, or anything.
And also, if you still want that, what is it? In for a penny, for a something, in for a pound? Or
in for a penny, in for a pound, yeah.
What the heck? How are we mixing two currencies? Like in for a pence, in for a pound?
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're already going to have to do something, you might as well do all of it for a kitchen or all for a bath. But I think to loop us back to what we were talking about is the, can you make money off of it? Because I feel like that's the complaint most designers have then is, oh, well, if I do a kitchen where I'm not going to make a lot of money off of it from markup revenue, I also have to do another room with furnishings. And I feel like I've changed with this over the years. In the beginning, a lot of my projects were just kitchen and bath, and I was making not as much on kitchen and bath. I think some of that was a combination of my design rate being too low to justify the work. But the other part of that was like, I wanted to do more furnishing. And because of that, I felt, well, I have to make them do both. And I've sort of softened on that approach over the last year or so here as I'm like working out what it takes to keep me and my studio overhead and like things afloat is okay, but does that have to be my hardline approach?
Yeah, you're going to turn everything. The work away.
Yeah. And if I like the project and they want to pay and I can do it and I want to do it, do I have to have this hardline approach? And I don't feel like I do if I can make kitchen and bath efficient.
So have you been doing furnishing minimum or minimum expenditures on just a kitchen?
Yes.
Which I think helps. So I guess we should say one way that you can kind of guarantee more revenue is to have a minimum expenditure. It doesn't all have to be a lot. If it's a kitchen, you have to kind of think of what could they possibly buy from you,
yeah,
and what you're willing to sell them. I wouldn't like add things that you don't have any markup on, like, and don't take responsibility for stuff that you can't absorb.
Right.
But it is also, I feel like there's a little bit of, like in our client purchasing guide, we explain this for clients, for designers to explain to their clients about what it means to purchase with a designer. And I think it's sort of like breaking the seal on that. Even if your purchasing minimum is only $10,000 or could be even less, it's still telling them, this is something that I do. I sell window treatments. I sell tile sometimes.
Right.
Depending if I want to. Lighting, like there's certain things that you can and need to buy from me. And then usually they'll end up buying more stuff. Like a remodel project I'm in right now, I only am really responsible for two bathrooms and a kitchen. But then there's the rest of the house is getting touched. So they were looking for a coffee table to fit in this smaller space. I'm like, well, I could sell that to you. And they've already been buying stuff from me. So it's a shorter conversation.
Yeah, it's easier to handle one-offs when you're already in for a lot. Not that you want the satisfaction of being able to do a whole room, but I'm also not going to let them go hand it over to West Elm.
No, and they were literally going to buy it from Burke Decor, something that I have a really good rate on. So
yeah.
Yeah, and you don't have to explain it. If you start that conversation from the beginning and they're already going to buy some stuff from you, then you don't have to do the tap dance of, I'm a designer. Of course I sell things. Sometimes people feel awkward. I know a lot of designers feel awkward trying to sell stuff.
Yes.
So if you get that all out of the way up front and you're selling even a little bit of stuff, like the expectation is they are going to buy some stuff from you, then through the process, they'll probably end up buying more.
I know there's an ease that if we make it easy in the sales process, then they do just keep coming to you. Cause we joke about this being the, do you want fries with that? Just like, we're already doing this.
Well, you've had your meal. Like, would you like dessert? There's still more.
They're still sitting at the table.
We got some aperitifs. Well. Like, you want a cocktail at the end?
Yeah. Like, you can linger at the table a little longer. Yeah. If I'm already doing window treatments in one room, there are economies of scale. And I always mention that to clients. I'm like, if I'm already here, I'm already collecting measurements, I'm already doing this stuff. Like, where do you want me to stop? That's up to you. But like, how much do you want to get done? And I feel like,
let's get it done. I think that once they are, especially if they're in the pain and suffering of a remodel and they're living there, or even if not, they're just tired of being involved in it.
Yeah,
it's Rebecca, like, let's get this done. Yeah, let's not have folks back in our hair again for a while.
Yeah, they want you out as much as possible before too long.
Yes.
I feel that. The profitability of it when it comes to the minimums, though, it is, I will say, it's a little harder. Like, I think we've had a few get, you know, who comes to mind is Linda Hazlett's episode. We'll link it in the show notes. But she talked about how she would like, if contractors kind of aren't playing the game and she has someone better, she'll bring in either a better trade or she'll do the purchasing on something if it's not going to work out for a kitchen. She talked about bringing in her own countertops and bringing in her own fabricator to make it work for a job better. But I think what she touched on that was interesting in that episode was just that idea of we can still control part of that process. Like some contractors like to say, oh, we have to buy it all, but there aren't, I've yet to run into some of them who do that on my own, where they're like, I have to buy all the stuff, but I know they exist. So
especially
I'm not saying
bigger,
they don't.
Bigger firms that are organized and they have their own overheads and things they're trying to manage. And I mean, I think they're organized, so they know.
They know
their P&L. Yeah.
Yeah. But things in general that you can still make money off of are, yeah, you can make money off countertops. Like you can go to Daltile and Petrosians and any major, even stone suppliers. Like they know you're selling it to the trade because that's what they already do when they sell it to a contractor or a fabricator. So you can be the purchaser of the slab and sell it to your clients with
Have you ever done that?
No, but I'm like ready to.
You are?
Yes.
So what are the 100%. Risks with that? What if, I don't know. I just don't want people coming back to me for chips and cracks and stuff.
I don't, well, I mean, if designers want to sound off on that, you know where to find us. I just know so many other designers who are already doing it. And most of them are just saying, usually after it's bought, like it moves to the fabricator. And most of that liability is under the fabricator. Like yeah. The manufacturing of it and the changing of it. Kind of like
if they screw up or miscut like or something, it's on them.
It's on them. Or if there are natural fissures in natural stone that like some of that could just happen, but your risk of liability is limited to that. I think there's room to make, especially with quartz materials. I mean, obviously not if you're in Australia, but not new laws in Australia. If you're not sure, yeah, there's new laws in Australia that are basically going to make it illegal to sell quartz-based materials like man-made countertops. So that's a whole different topic we're not going to go into. But yeah, I think you can make a lot of money off of that. The fabricators sometimes don't know. Some of them don't even mark up anything. They just take the immediate raw number and just pass it all along without any money being made.
And I do think there's also, I mean, obviously it depends on the relationship you have with the contractor and the client's relationship with the contractor. But there are times that I feel like conversations are had without me.
Yeah.
And different decisions could get made. So.
How so?
Well, like the contractor could undermine you and say, oh, we can get a lookalike of this at my
other guy
shop like, down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And what you thought was happening does not actually happen until it's too late.
Like but you're
like
saying,
substitute out a different material is basically what I'm saying.
But
if you're not controlling it.
Yeah, if it's not already spec'd out, this is designer purchasing before the contractor's even involved.
Right. So if you're the designer purchasing and you're in charge of that product, then that is less likely to happen.
Yeah, I would not want to leave it up for grabs. Like I would definitely want to mark that on the FF&E schedule as designer purchasing and we're not negotiating. So it's shared really early. Same thing I do with like light when I put lighting or hardware and I'm the one doing that, like I'm making money off that too. And it's not up to the contractor to purchase that. They don't care.
No,
about
but
it.
Like it happened to me on this job where it was just a little countertop on a bathroom vanity. And the fabricator brought it up that he could use a substitute for a third of the cost. And that got brought up to the client. And I mean, I am on all the communications, but I'm like, for that specific thing, I wasn't going to tell them they should spend an extra $1,000 if they didn't really want to, because it wasn't that big of a showstopper or anything. But those kinds of things.
Versus, I mean, there we're getting tiny too. Like, we're talking about one small piece of a total project.
Yeah, yeah. So, but that, if that happened on a bigger job, like, I'd be pissed.
I feel like part of that, what you're talking about, is how much do we have to stand behind the purchasing minimum of this? That's not what we've agreed upon. It's not in the design plan. Like, at some point, we have to stand behind.
But I wasn't, I wasn't selling that product. So it so wasn't buy-in really.
Was like low.
Yes. So if it was something that I was selling or it sold or we bought, we already bought the slab, like, fuck off.
Fuck off, Shiv. Yeah.
Like, it's already tagged and done. Like, yeah, you don't need to pipe in here.
Yeah.
Then I'd have no problem like shutting that down. But when it's like,
yeah, I feel like you have to do it. The client has to already be bought in before the contractor is even done. And that's what I've been doing on a couple jobs recently, is like, we're already starting purchasing on stuff like hardware, lighting, things like that before the contractor even started. So that mm-hmm. way there's like less of that happening.
Which is
and
also,
I feel like you could do the same with countertops of, well, totally. You got the bid, you already agreed to the bid. Now let's go tag our slabs. And yeah. then, you know, the contractor said, yeah, you need two. So we're going to go tag our two slabs and be done with it. And it's already, the deposit's down. I've already sold it. My invoice says no returns. Like, it's right.
And then
done.
So probably that conversation would never even happen if they, everybody knew that. And yeah. I do think it's smart to start selling some of that stuff early.
Because you also sell tile.
Yeah. Some stuff, it might be hard. Like, I want the contractor really involved with before I purchase any tile, but finished or accessories and lighting and stuff, it's kind of something I think I'm going to start doing earlier, because that can get left out at the end. If a client's, nope, that this all took a right turn, we're just going to not spend on those beautiful pendants anymore. I just don't want to take a risk of anything like that happening.
Yeah,
anymore.
I totally know that
the window
does.
Treatments, like, I'm selling those way up right now.
Yeah, those, that stuff has to be brought up very early. Tell us about where it is. We're going to start buying that stuff, because it does seem kind of small when it's early to be buying like pendants or lighting or whatever. And it's also kind of like fun for the client to do early.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. This is going to be the finished stuff. And they get
and
excited
check,
about
like
it.
Like, we got that checked off the list.
Yeah. Yeah. It's done. We got these little things done. And there's no going back later when a change order comes up for something in the whole project. I don't want to lose out on what makes it profitable for me, just because
profitable and a finished project. So the, that's the thing, is a lot of these items we're talking about, they are the money makers for us, but they are also what makes me want to photograph the space.
And so you're also adding this other dimension to it, which is like the idea that when procurement starts, we've talked about that idea of having a line item that's set aside for like accessories, or it's just like a flat line that gets put on and they kind of already give you the retainer for those things. Mm-hmm. Is it kind of does make sense to have them pay that out before it's too late? Because
that's the first thing to, or that's,
it's like
go.
The stuff they start cutting pretty early. And I know kitchens and baths don't have as much of it, but every little bit matters, is what we start to realize when you add up where you make your revenue stream. All those little bits and pieces add up to a lot throughout a year. So it does, the cross sell of it all does matter. And I do think that makes sense to sort of start collecting that line item of, here's what we need, pay it early, we get the retainer. Because what I've discovered too from clients, they tend to forget about money they already paid out for something. Like, they know it's out there, but they're not, they don't think of it as, oh, this is a little piggy bank I can raid later when it's been paid to us. They've,
oh, can we have that back so yeah, I can put this header beam in? Yeah,
yeah, no. Yeah. It doesn't usually work like that. Give us your dollars. So I feel like it's easier once we collect it soon, like early in the process, of just let's add all that stuff in as early as possible.
So how much of this, we're kind of, that's a little bit of sidetrack, but how yeah. much of this to you is like to what I was saying a minute ago related to photography?
What do you mean? Making rooms pretty or?
Yeah. Well, like, I was having this just thought to myself yesterday. What if you were told going into a project, you could not ever photograph it? How much would you want to do it?
I wouldn't.
Right.
That's in my contract. So if someone was like, no, I'm sorry, I would have to make.
But there's
how much would I want to do it would change depending on how much more they're willing to pay me to do it.
Or are they telling their celebrity friends because they're all...
I would never count on that though, because I feel like that's the great lie of all of this is like how many of those times where people keep thinking, like there's so many of those designers who tell that story where they're like, this is going to be great for me. And it almost never is the truth.
No, but at a certain level, they're like Amber Interiors. There's a big percentage of her jobs that will never see the light of day because of NDAs. But and it's worth it to her.
She's making so much money off of them, though, that it's fine.
Exactly. But she probably is getting other work because she's considered discreet and does a good job.
Yeah. You know? But they got to pay. They'd have to pay a lot for me to justify doing it without the ability to share it or show it or do anything with it at this point in my career.
So I guess I wouldn't want to do it. I wouldn't either. So, like, because I was just thinking there are so many jobs that just I have not been able to get to the finish line for one reason or another. And by finish line, I mean photos.
Yeah.
And if I'd have known from the beginning, I don't think I definitely wouldn't have done them. Because, I mean, usually they don't get to the finish line because there's some sort of
personality issue. Yeah, Steph goes, I know specifically one you're talking about.
Well, there's a couple that I have.
Yeah, there's definitely, and it feels like part of it for some of yours is also like they feel like that's like a bargaining chip. Like they have the power almost. And it's just
one of them still pisses me off.
Yeah, but it's just like a power trip. Like, I'm not going to let you do that unless you do X, Y. And it's like, you know what? F off. Like, you don't control me because of photographs. Like, it sucks, but I'm going to walk at any moment
If you're not going to let me do it for no good reason, then we're also not really having a relationship at all anymore.
Yeah.
But aside from that
specific one, they felt like they deserved something like they did not. From that they were being very unreasonable. They were writing like 4-page responses to something simple.
Yeah. People have, you never know what journey people are going through.
No, they went off the deep end.
So I guess, okay, just to go back, my thought is all of these finished accessory details, whether it's counter stools, the lighting you chose, the window shades you want on the windows, the right hardware, all of those add up to me wanting to photograph this project, but also those are the items I make the most money off of. So if those things don't happen, then the photos don't happen. And then going back to what I asked you, we even want to take the project.
No.
So it's almost, I have to know that I can photograph this. There's no guarantee, but if there's a guarantee that I won't, then I don't want to do it. So putting
that.
The minimums in place is your best insurance policy.
Keeps your buy-in too, because you're like, well, that door still remains open because we're meeting these criteria.
It's like my insurance policy for my photo shoot. If you're only doing a kitchen and a bath, so there's no other rooms to shoot.
Yeah.
You can't shoot around them. So like getting that minimum expenditure in place and selling those products early, I think, before spending fatigue kicks in.
Hey, hotties, we're taking a break to talk to you about Moe's Home Collection.
Look to Moe's for their full line of furniture and home decor that will give your projects that perfect blend of relaxed and modern vibes.
And the in-house design team at Moe's has created elevated and design-forward creations from across the globe.
As designers, we appreciate that they focus on quality while bringing unique and new styles that infuse life to our projects.
The Moe's website also makes our lives easier as designers with high-quality product photography and up-to-date online inventory so you can source quickly.
Moe's is a no-brainer to help your business grow with no order minimums and their low freight costs.
And you can expect something new at each market where they introduce more than 300 new products. So be sure to visit their showrooms in Las Vegas and High Point.
Great news. Podcast listeners can save an extra 10% off their purchase using code HYDC10 at checkout.
So register for your account at moeshomecollection.com today.
Yeah, I've seen more success on this when I can start even like really early. Like, great, you signed the bid. Here's some of the stuff that like we need to get going on. And I have started doing plumbing fixtures. I feel like we've talked about this. Like,
I'm selling them.
Yeah, like I can do through the local showrooms. Like, sell.
Yeah, I feel like the only way to really make money off that is to develop a relationship with a local showroom who will play with their margins.
Right. And they will, one of the local ones to me will even say, these are some of our lines that we carry where it's kind of hard to come too much lower. Like, they don't get big discounts. Like, for them, it's like Delta and Kohler don't really give them great margin because they're so to the public that it's hard for them to make a lot off of it. But they'll tell me like upfront, hey, you probably only want to add like 10 to 15% on these because we're just not going to be able to compete with brands like Build or whoever who are going to underscore them. But other lines like Newport Brass, California Faucet, stuff like that, they're like, yeah, you can do 20 to 30% on those, no problem. Because they're not also very big, like public to the consumer brands. So it's a little bit easier. And a lot of those are like made to order components. So it is something that's not as easy to compare to just like an online catalog.
And you're offering a service to sell it, which helps. Like, you're helping the customer. So you should get paid for that.
Something. Yeah. So those I can make money off of. And I don't make money directly off of appliances, but I'm trying to stick with one vendor for appliances because of their like rewards programs that they offer. And some appliance vendors also have their own reward
one
programs.
One manufacturer or
I'll send clients to one of two places. Like, I've been sending some to Perch in Costa Mesa, and Perch has a program, like sort of a designer rewards program. But then also the individual vendors have their own, like Monogram has a program and Thermador has their own program. And like, you do, it kind of does require you to like work the game with everyone a little bit. But like, an appliance package can make you some good money. Like, they don't pay out like all the, some of them are quarterly, some of them are annually, but you can add that into your income stream little by little if you're doing a lot of just a kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense to do, like, Middleby is also who sells Viking, AGA, La Cornu, I think. Who else were they? We went to their booth in Cabez.
Do they have LaConge or no?
No.
No.
No, I think it was just Viking, AGA, and La Cornu was in there, right?
Yeah.
And so same thing, whether it's like a rewards program. But I think it is smart to do that and then also just increase your education with one or two lines.
Yeah.
It's impossible to know every single thing and what, because they change too.
All the time.
All the time. Yeah. Like, now so-and-so is getting a bad reputation for repairs, like whatever. Like, you just need to stay on top of that. And I think that's smart to do.
I mean, what I've learned is sort of like, it's the cobbled together approach a little bit of just every piece really does start to add up on making the money. And I've heard from other designers of, can't remember who said it, but someone was like, basically kitchens are like twice as much as any other room because there's so much that goes into it from a design perspective, and planning cabinetry and all the detail work that goes into it is so big, but you're really, that's just kind of hour for hour type of money. So you're not really making.
They're twice as much in design fees.
Yeah. But you're not making a whole lot of money.
You're spending twice as many hours.
Yeah, that's hour for hour payment, but you're not able to get more work that way. You're not able to get more dollars per hour from doing that work like you are with markup revenue on other things.
So the other big component is cabinetry.
Oh my God.
And that to me, the thing with cabinets is do it if you like cabinets and figuring out cabinets. I do not want to be responsible for knowing. I mean, there's so much to, especially if it's like a semi-custom cabinet line, like you have to know a lot.
I know. I feel like I would enjoy the challenge of becoming an expert at one of them, but I also realize that I have yet to find a like stocked cabinetry line that
you want to stand behind.
That I want to stand behind, that meets all my needs, that I would use, you know, multiple times. That's usually my challenge, is I don't want to produce the same results every time. I want to create something different. And that is also what I've learned, is just that working within the confines of that gets challenging. And I don't like that limitation. I feel like I would want to default back to custom too often to make it profitable, you know?
I did it once. So I subbed, like I worked with a kitchen designer who has a line. And so I worked, she has a designer program, and she like, you know, did all the ordering and helped with the drawings and stuff. But it was like the height of 2021, I think. And the manufacturer obviously was having delays and manufacturing issues. Mm-hmm. And we had one cabinet, then the cabinets were sitting in the garage for, of course, like 6 weeks. And then once install came, we had one cabinet that had hidden damage, and the client was unreasonable because there was another delay. And obviously they were upset because their kitchen was out of, you know, service, but there's nothing that I could do about it. And that came back on me. And I just don't want to be responsible for that kind of stuff, because it was
it came back on you unreasonably, though. Like, it wouldn't.
It did, but I think a lot of people are unreasonable.
I know.
Unpopular pessimistic opinion.
I don't believe that, but I think that in that case, I know what you're talking about. There were so many other red flags going on. They were just ready to latch on to anything at that point in time. And they were also projecting themselves. And you have a sense of responsibility just inherently. So that's the problem, I think.
I corrected it as quickly and to the best that I could, but I can't make manufacturing and shipping speed up.
And that's I feel like that's the...
There's no local solution. So that's where it becomes. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of people don't want. They feel like that's unacceptable. And you're just like, you cannot like it, but that still is the truth. And they're not okay just sitting with it. And they feel like, well, if I keep making noise, it will fix it, which is a sign of immense privilege that they acted that way in that project. And that's the problem that you get when you go with something like that, is...
Yeah, because budget was definitely top of mind.
I mean, if you're poor, just say that. If we had to think about budget and we had to pick this is the service trade-off that you made, was like, well, we were trying to save money and this is what happens. Sometimes things are damaged or the response time is slower. So
BT dubs global pandemic. What do you want me to do? Yeah. I just want to walk around with a shirt that just says shit happens and like the little shruggy emoji. Like
on your, just like that's your site visit outfit constantly.
Like, yeah, I can't control shit happens. Like,
they were particularly awful about it, but I do think that there is, obviously that other designer makes a significant portion of their income, or you would think makes, I don't know if they do, but I'm going to bet that there's a reason why they decided to carry a line and to offer that.
Yeah, she has margins on it. And she did everything she could. She was great.
Just being unreasonable.
And but they had like life stuff happening. And
What did you mark up on that? Do you remember?
I think like 15.
That's not bad.
No, like it was a decent amount.
On a large cabinetry order?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't worth it. And that was one of the ones that I didn't end up shooting. And I'm still bitter about it. But
well, they were particularly bad people too. It wasn't.
I don't know.
Make it sit well.
I'm not going to say bad people, but.
Bad karma.
Just bad timing. I think they just had stuff going on that just ended up throwing me under the bus. So I don't know. That's, I'm sure most designers have had some sort of similar situation of being,
or several of them like that,
thrown under the bus.
Yeah, we become the natural scapegoat for a lot of things, unfortunately. But I, the profitability of carrying a cabinet line, I think, is dubious. If you are, I think, if you are specifically a kitchen and bath designer,
yes,
then not having a cabinet line that you rep is a mistake. Like, you, if you are only doing kitchen and bath, and
like,
that,
get yourself a little showroom, get yourself a line. Like, it could be, you could have custom too, I would imagine, and you just have a deal worked out with a local custom shop, and then you have some tiers to sell. But
because anyone who's doing a kitchen is going to need cabinets, and so for you to be a one-stop shop would be ideal, because they're more likely going to just go with your recommendation. Also, if you can pass on some pricing changes, yeah, the quote compared to full custom on a kitchen compared to a prefabricated line, they're going to see immediate savings. And so you're going to have those people who are sensitive to price who end up sticking with your line because they know it does save them money.
Yeah. And as long as, like, they know the risk reward of it all.
Yeah.
I think it is smart to do it if you want to.
If you want it.
I just don't want to. Like, sure, I'd love to make more money doing that stuff, but all the issues, I'm not going to say all, but almost all the issues I've ever had on kitchens revolve around cabinets. It's just the biggest piece that affects the most stuff. So, and the clients,
I'm trying to think what my biggest issue.
I
do a lot of custom though. So then there's like people there fitting them.
They fix it.
Like, it's already, oh, we need to add.
But if it wasn't custom and some of the stuff happened and you were responsible for those things, the final finished painted cabinets getting pulled in and
not
wrapped properly, and they were like all scraped up. Like, they fixed it, but it wasn't on me. I didn't sell them the cabinets.
Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine because I've already avoided so many of those problems. So it's hard to look.
Take responsibility.
Where it's like, oh, what would it look like the other way? Because I haven't had that experience.
Where every one of those fix it calls were for me. Like, yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. I feel like some of that too is also the learning curve of being able to tell people, like, great, you actually shouldn't be calling me right now. We should be calling the fabricator, or we should be calling whoever's doing the carpentry and assembly for them. We need to
be
calling the
fit carpenter. But if you sold it, you would be the call.
If it was damaged, but not if it was,
or
like
it wasn't
install
fitting
issue.
Right or something.
No, there's some of what it's piecemeal, but like the fit would also be like that comes back to us if we were the ones who were supposed to measure it. But if it was measured correctly, and we ordered the right
pieces. It depends what we're talking about, custom versus a prefab line. Because if it's the wrong part comes in, like that happens, you don't know until install date, that's your call.
Yeah.
That's your service call. I mean, it would just be a lot of stuff that would be on you.
No, I'm curious.
But you would get a lot more of
I'm curious
money,
how much that other designer gets of that stuff. I'm curious.
I mean, she does control a lot more. Like, she'll only use one installer that she totally trusts. She has her own warehouse. Yeah. She has her own warehouse, I think, where she can kind of manage deliveries and inspections and stuff. So, like, you would just have to control a lot more of it, which is totally doable.
It's just like a whole other business line that also in. There's limitations, realistically, designers, we've talked about this before, if you're listening, hotties, that in California, where we are, there's some technicalities in the, if you are selling the cabinetry directly, are you acting like a contractor? There's going to be another installer of them, and it's not really a product, but a service kind of, I don't want to go too far down that path, but we've talked about this before, that there are some ethical ramifications for designers too in California about how they sell them. And I think the way that that's changed differently around is if you are the true like seller of them and you are making money off of it, then the liability falls to you. Yeah. And you have to hold up to that. And if you're starting out and you're small, I don't blame you for avoiding that ramification of just not wanting to get into it yet. So I don't feel like it has to be like an all or nothing if you're in that situation where you're just like, but can I just make money off other stuff? I think you can
wait.
That's
what we do. I mean, there's...
Just wait in slowly. I mean, make money off something different.
Yeah, do what you feel comfortable with and what you think you can handle. Like, I personally... get very stressed about problems.
It's also like an emotional weight, like personal thing. Of just
hugely, that
you don't want that on you.
It affects me greatly, and I don't think. I mean, I know that not every designer is affected like that, but some are. So, like, know thyself.
Yeah, don't do something if it's going to make your life worse just to make money. Like, that's a weird trade-off.
No, but that's a deal with the devil. Like,
and you might find some great relationships along the way. Like, I do know there are designers who get like a commission from projects that they refer to custom cabinet makers, and the cabinet maker just builds in that commission into the sales price to the client, and they get a nice little commission payment to the designer out of it. I think you can probably figure out some of that to be effective for you, but you've got to stick with a place and talk to them about that and probably
and build a relationship.
Right. Like, you can't just show up on the first day and say, I want a commission plan. If they don't already do that with someone and you're just showing up on day one asking for it, like, probably not. Like, they probably need to know that you're going to stick with them regardless of what's
in
it for you.
And the same with flooring showrooms and
tile. They make money off flooring too.
Yeah. I have a relationship with a tile and flooring showroom, and he's great. And like, I talked to him yesterday, and we are always trying to help each other in our businesses. And there's different ways. Either he will sell to me at a lower price if he can, and he'll tell me on, like you were saying before, or sometimes if I don't want to deal with the sale, then he'll go direct to the client and he'll give me a commission, cut me a commission check later.
Okay.
And that's just based on preference. Am I selling this person a bunch of stuff? Yes or no? Do I want to like process a $40,000 flooring order? I don't know. It just depends on the project of whether I want to deal with it or not.
But you can make money off of that stuff if you're smart.
Flooring for sure. Like, flooring is one that I think a lot of designers skip on. And I think there's a lot of flooring showrooms, especially. Like, I don't know about going direct to the manufacturer. I'm sure you can. There are some that actually have designer programs, but if you develop a relationship with a showroom, you'll also get help with education and the sales process and be able to drop in with your clients and not feel like you're doing something shady because you're going to buy from them.
It definitely feels easier to go through the floor, because also the flooring showrooms have a lot of times like their own installers. And quite honestly, like, most of the contractors that I've worked with are happy to not have to do and deal with flooring installation if the showroom already has a crew that they work with for it. They kind of don't. Most of my contractors don't want to do the flooring install anyway. They have to have someone do it regardless.
Right, they're subbing it out no matter what. And
like, they might want to do the baseboards themselves and have the finished carpentry around casings and doors and stuff like that. Like, they want to do that anyway. So they're happy to just let the flooring people come in and bang it out without them having to be too heavily involved. So
yeah, definitely develop a relationship with flooring companies and tile as well. Like, that same vendor, he also sells a lot of tile, and he is a distributor, or he's a, I don't know what he was considered. He can sell like Bedrosians and stuff to.
Yeah, because you don't have a local Bedrosians.
We do.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh. Why did I think
I do
you
it both ways. I buy direct sometimes or through him.
But he's like a reseller. He's but he has multiple lines too. So.
Oh, he has a lot. Yeah. Or if I found this Spanish line the other day, that's what he called me about yesterday. And he's like trying to find a U.S. distributor that can sell it.
Ooh.
So he'll do like research and stuff. Or I sell fire clay tile directly. So I buy directly and sell it without a third party. And it's 15%, but it's going to add up if it's a big order.
Yeah, the large order stuff really makes really makes sense when you're, because they're already committed. What are you going to do? Cut back on tile in a shower? No, you're already, it needs how much tile it needs. There's no cutting back like there is with like furnishings or accessories where you're just like, well, we don't need that side table. It's, I'm sorry, you still need a backsplash.
You need to finish the shower. And if they're doing the bathroom and the kitchen, like it can be like a nice overall amount.
Yeah.
And the client doesn't pay more. So like we get a
what's the problem?
Discount. So yeah. There's no issues.
So we
morality
all just get paid.
Issues. So definitely get paid and do the part that you love about it. I guess you can outsource a lot of stuff. If you don't want to do elevations and drawings and stuff, you can partner with somebody who specializes in that. That's what I do a lot of the time.
That way you get to do the creative part, make some money off of it, but not have to be bogged down in the detail work.
Yeah, and keep it moving. Like they're not waiting on me.
Yeah.
In my stupid schedule.
And we did talk about this a little bit more in our recent Patreon episode about, we talked with Claire, Rebecca's business partner in the Happy Hour Design Collective, because they offer design to go. So we talked a little bit about how you guys do that, because you do kind of still make money off of that stuff. And we got kind of into the nitty gritty about that.
Yeah. So that's like a design only process we have that we do not project manage. We do not do any like construction stuff. They can ask a couple questions, but we get into more detail on how we set that up and how we try to kind of get in, get out, and who it's for, why we do it. And that's a totally different way that you could make money on kitchens and baths without necessarily selling things.
Yeah. I feel like that is what's interesting about that we talked about and highlighted in that episode is the idea that the limited scope is what makes it help.
Yeah.
Makes the profitability is, it's the profitability in your time not spent on other things that you would typically be involved in with full service. So yeah, you're still not having to invest 100 hours into something and you get in and get out faster. And
but
that's
still
what
offer value.
The profit.
You still offer value, and it's especially great for a certain kind of type of person who wasn't going to hire a designer in the first place.
Or knows they need to, but just doesn't like.
Either it's a budget issue or they don't want to have one involved because they are pretty savvy and can manage a lot of the stuff themselves.
Yeah.
We see both. That was our February Patreon-ish episode.
Yeah. So that's worth checking out.
Getting good feedback on that.
Yeah. I think what I'm picking up from a lot of designers is that we're all sort of looking at and assessing what we're working on, what we like and what we don't like. And I just feel like that's a constant game for designers of, is this worth it? Is it not? What are the risks I haven't considered? Why am I doing that? And I feel like it's easy to get caught in those patterns. So it's a wise thing to look at it a little bit differently and talk with each other about it. And that's what helps. That's what helps you and I do it. That's what's helped our designers in our hottie hangouts on Patreon do it. I think having other designers to bounce those ideas off of helps you determine if you should reassess your services or if you do what you should avoid. It's very helpful. Truly.
And one thing we didn't say, you can also have, you don't do just kitchens and just baths. You only do full or half home remodels in a kitchen and a bathroom can be part of that.
Yeah.
So you can also set your sights way higher. And I think most of us would want that.
Absolutely.
So set your own little rules and sell it.
Make some money.
Make some monies, honeys.
Money.
Okay, well.
Back to making money.
Back to wrapping up a kitchen and bathroom project.
There you go. Exactly. We got to get back up to speed now. So until next time.
Stay hot, designers.
Thanks for listening to the Hot Young Designers Club podcast.
For more on what we talked about today, check out the show notes.
Your support helps us grow, so share with your design besties.
And subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts.
Our conversations continue on Instagram.
And be sure to download our monthly resources on our website and our Patreon.